This is the Political Geek.
And welcome to the Political Geek. This is the episode for August 14th, the day after the straw poll. My gosh, I can't hardly believe that it's already over with. That's just, it was an incredible day. I have to tell you that it was a very interesting day for me. I spent the entire day at the Iowa Straw Poll, which I call sort of the Iowa State Fair of politics. There are a lot of people out there, and the weather was phenomenal for everybody that that took part. That we had sunshine, we had a nice brisk breeze blowing. In fact, the breeze was blowing so much it blew over some of the tents early on. They had to do a little bit of reinforcement, and really a good crowd. And let me tell you a couple things that I found out that I didn't really have a chance to pass along. And that is that in the past, what candidates did is bring a lot of buses of people. You know, you start out in areas like, the eastern part of the state, the western part of the state, and you bus in just as many people as you can get in those buses and bring them to Ames to participate in the straw poll. That's always been the way that it has, has been as long as the straw poll's been in existence. Well, and I talked with Kane Robinson, and many of you may remember Kane Robinson was instrumental in giving the straw poll kind of the prominence that it has, both as a Republican fundraising event and as something that that becomes sort of the kickoff of the presidential campaign, as it were, nationally. And of course, Kane, you know, he's got a lot of other things on his mind these days. He's working for the NRA, doing a lot of work with them, and they were in at the straw poll. They had a tent and were talking there. But Kane took the time to actually count the number of buses that came into the straw poll, and he counted 100 buses and told me this as we were just chatting, waiting for the results. And back in 1999, when he was involved with it and they had their record crowd, there were 300 buses. So, and they had 22,000 people back in 1999. This year, we had a total of 16,892, almost 17,000. So, Matt Straughan was on all of the talk shows today saying that, you know, it was second highest crowd that they've ever had. That's true, this time around. But one thing that Kane and I noticed was a lot of people this time drove in by themselves. So they weren't part of the big party mechanism. They actually took the time to get in the car, fill it with gas, drive to Ames, struggle to find a place to park, wait around for somebody in a trolley cart to come pick them up and take them to Hilton Coliseum, because if you've ever been to Hilton, you know, there's a pretty long walk from the time that you find a place to park to the time that you get to the front door. So there was a lot involved. People had to take a lot of time to be a part of it, and I'm not sure that too many people truly appreciate that fact, that it does take so much of an effort in order to be a part of the straw poll. So I'm glad that that people did make it down. I think it was an incredible opportunity for people to really enjoy what we're all about. And I'm just hopeful that we'll continue to see it get expanded in the years to come. And of course, then again, a lot of Republicans say, well, you know, I don't know if I really want it to expand. What we really want to do is elect another president that's a Republican, and then, you know, we won't have another one in 4 years because, well, he'll be the incumbent running again and he won't have competition. Well, maybe so, but straw poll event really important for the Republican Party in Iowa because they raise boku bucks from that. Well, let me just remind you, if you've just tapped in, we are available. You can call us on our toll-free line, which is available for you, and that toll-free line is 866-266-2469. Again, that's 866-266-2469. 2469. That will dial you in to the number that you need to call to be a part of this. And you can comment anytime. We'll let you break in. You can also, if you're on Blog Talk Radio, you can also be a part of that as well. And we have a chat room that's open on Blog Talk Radio, and you can comment on Twitter. We follow all that fun stuff. So just be a part of it today. We do appreciate you being with us and being a part of this stuff that we put on. Next up, of course, we've got to talk about what happened at the Iowa straw poll. And as you all may or may not know, we ended up with a day full of activities, a lot of speeches. There were almost a carnival-like atmosphere outside. And inside, well, the candidates gave their speeches, and then we waited around, and shortly before 6 p.m., the Republican Party chair of Iowa, Matt Straughan, came out and announced the vote very succinctly.
With 16,892 Iowans voting, the winner of the 2011 Iowa straw poll is Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann.
Just like that. That's all it took. And the vote was announced. She won with 4,823 votes. We later found out Ron Paul received 4,671. Tim Pawlenty, 2,293. Rick Santorum, 1,657. Herman Cain, 1,456. Mitt Romney, 567. Newt Gingrich, 385. John Huntsman with 69. Thaddeus McCotter, 35, and then a scattering of votes, 162, and Rick Perry got 718 write-in votes during that effort. So what do you think? I personally, it was an interesting time. I think there were some people very afraid because of the fact that Ron Paul had a very sizable presence, as he does at these straw poll events. And some had felt that he might win in the final tally. There were many people really worried about that. Among those, well, Mike Huckabee, who we'll talk to a little. Let's play a little bit of what he was talking about when he talked about Ron Paul.
Look, he's always had a terrific following, and there are people who are very fervent. Ron Paul's bigger problem is not the result of this. Ron Paul's problem, that may be the coup de grace for him, was the answer the other night on Iran. I mean, that was just so far out there. It's one thing to say you ought to get rid of the Fed and go to the gold standard. You know what? Maybe that's a good idea. But to say that it's the same thing for Iran to have a nuclear weapon as the Soviet Union, I mean, that's indefensible. That is an indefensible remark. The Soviet Union and the United States had a nuclear proliferation for one reason. Neither side wanted the other side to use theirs and felt that if there was enough of a buildup, it was a zero-sum game and nobody could win, and that's how the whole thing ended up happening. Iran has stated openly that the reason they want a nuclear weapon is so they can use the darn thing. That's not the same. And for someone to act like that it doesn't matter if Iran has a weapon, and gee, everybody else has one, I'd want one too. Everybody in the house may have a gun, but the two-year-old doesn't get one. They just don't. You don't let a child have a loaded gun and expect it's going to turn out well.
So, Governor, does that mean that Ron Paul is not a presidential material?
Well, I mean, I'll let people decide that. But I would never vote for a person who believes that it's okay for Iran to have a nuclear device, and knowing that they've already declared that they'd like to turn it on Israel first and the United States second, that the practice shot would be Israel and the real shot would be the U.S. Come on. Nobody would, I think, believe that that's a foreign policy that anyone can live with.
So you'd never vote for Ron Paul?
Well, let me just say, I don't think I'll ever have that opportunity.
Mike Huckabee, as he was talking to reporters at the Iowa straw poll, no love lost there on the part of Mike Huckabee with respect to the wit and wisdom of Ron Paul. That was probably the strongest statement I've heard about Ron Paul so far in these presidential races. So I think it's kind of an interesting time. We'll talk more about Ron Paul in just a minute or two. First, I kind of want to reflect back before we get into, you know, who won, who lost, all of that stuff. And again, a reminder, you can be a part of this real simply. Just get on the phone and give us a call. The phone number to call us, of course, is 866-266-2469. That's 866-266-2469. Pretty easy to remember, and you can be a part of all of this. But there are a lot of new... One thing that amazed me, there were a lot of new people that had never been to one of these events before. We talked to several people during the course of the day that had, you know, this was their first foray into presidential politics, and a lot of interesting ideas and interesting attitudes about the whole political race from these people that were just showing up for the very first time and really didn't know, you know, what to say, think, or do about it all. It was kind of funny. I talked to an associate political science professor at the University of Iowa, Tim Hagel, and at first I was led to believe, you know, he's a poli-sci prof. He's probably been to one of these things before. Turns out, nope, he hadn't, and he actually voted at the straw poll, so he got to see it from the outside and from the inside doing the actual vote. You know, I shook hands with him, and he still had the blue ink on his finger. In case you didn't know, just like in Iran when they did the elections, when you vote, you have blue ink on your finger. You know, they ink your finger, your index finger, so that they can tell that you voted, and it's a, and they will at times, as the need arises, actually swipe that finger if you go to vote again, and usually is residue from that ink that stays on the hand, so you can't really cheat in that respect. So they really treat this as fairly as possible so everybody gets a good shot. But we talked to Tim Hagel to kind of get his ideas of what was happening at the fair. Here's a little bit of what we talked about when we were having our little conversation yesterday in the middle of Hilton Coliseum at the Ames Straw Poll. Well, maybe not. Let's try it again. We're going to try to play it. Let's see if it'll play this time. Well, goodness gracious. Let's try to see if we can get it to play. Mine is technical worries today.
Like we had at least as good a crowd, if not maybe better than what we had 4 years ago.
Well, I must admit...
Okay, this is the part we will edit out when we put the final podcast together. Got to find where it's making that noise with our theme song that we don't want to hear again, because I'm not really anxious to play that back. There we go. So let's hear the interview with... So again, just to kind of set this up, this is Tim Hagel, University of Iowa Associate Professor of Political Science. His first time at the Iowa Straw Poll, and his first time to vote, and kind of got his reaction to everything.
First of all, your reaction to the crowd this time. It seemed like we had at least as good a crowd, if not maybe better than what we had 4 years ago.
Well, I must admit, this is my first time at Straw Poll, so I wasn't here 4 years ago, but I was just saw one of my students who's working the event, and she was saying that, yeah, it's a tremendous turnout, and I have to imagine that it's a lot bigger than it was 4 years ago. And that's not an entire surprise, given that 4 years ago, coming off 8 years of a Bush presidency, there's kind of a down feeling just generally, where at this point, with after 4 years of President Obama, people are ready for a change. Well, at least Republican people are ready for a change, and so it's no surprise that they turned out in force today. Plus, just such nice weather, why not?
What about the crowd reaction to the different candidates? It seemed like two standouts as far as the applause level, Ron Paul and Michelle Bachmann. How do you feel about it?
I saw everybody but the first and the last, Santorum and Kane,
And I think you're probably right. I think Pawlenty's folks did a pretty good job, too. I was sort of watching how they crowded up to the stage. And Pawlenty had a really good and sizable number there. But you're right. The Ron Paul folks, but that's traditional for them. They're very loyal, very vocal. And as you can see from even in here in the Coliseum, they got their signs up. They got the signs up on the road. So they're very, very active in that sort of thing. But the Bachman people are all over the place, too. It's one of the first things I noticed when I came in, just how many people wearing Bachman shirts. The Pawlenty folks, their stage, their tent area is a little bit off the beaten path. But boy, when you get over there, they were crowded, too. And so, there's a good turnout for several of the candidates today.
So Pawlenty may get his wish and be in the upper tier.
I would think so. That's what I'm sort of interested to see, that I had been saying for a long time that I think that Pawlenty really needs to be in that top three to be able to continue on as a viable candidate. And it looks like he's probably going to get it from what I've seen here today in terms of the number of supporters.
As far as those who didn't do so well and look like they may be dropping out, are the obvious picks there?
Well, it's kind of a funny thing because there are some people that run for president that aren't really running for president, that it's a way sometimes for people to get their name out there in various ways. And one example may be Thaddeus McCotter, that it's hard to say how he would have envisioned actually a path to the presidency. But on the other hand, this could be a way for him to raise his profile in various ways, particularly with the party faithful, whether it could be in terms of, a vice presidential pick perhaps, or, something else, a Senate seat in Michigan down the road, or maybe even a presidential thing, because even somebody like, say, Al Gore, who ran for president in 88 and came away saying that, the Iowa caucuses were madness, but then later came back and actually got the nomination, won the caucuses and got the nomination. So sometimes you have to sow those early seeds, reap them down the road.
The announcement by Rick Perry today, did that overshadow this, do you think?
I assume he actually did announce then, because I've been sort of out of contact as I've been walking around here. I don't think so. It's hard to tell given that I've been on site all day. But even coming into it, we sort of knew that it was going to happen, and then ultimately they announced that, yes, he was going to announce on Saturday. And some people were thinking, oh, was that going to steal the thunder from Ames? Probably not. I mean, this is where the bulk of the candidates are. This is where, even to the extent that he may have wanted to make sure that he was part of the discussion today, it's not necessarily that he was dissing Iowa, so to speak. Clearly he's coming here tomorrow, so it's a way of kind of kissing and making up, so to speak, to the extent that there were a few people that were unhappy with him perhaps trying to steal the thunder. But I think that strategically for him it was probably a good move, given that he didn't make his decision until fairly late. And if he had gotten into the on the ballot and into the mix, he probably wouldn't have had the results that he needed to appear a strong candidate, that he wouldn't have had that organization in place. And the Ames Straw Poll is the first test of organization, and so if you don't do well here, it's going to be tougher for candidates to move on down the road.
The way I'm hearing it painted amongst the Perry people is, since he's a write-in, if he gets any percentage, that's a win.
I wouldn't say any percentage, because especially as I saw the number of Americans for Perry people out there, I was a little surprised at how many people were there, and they have shirts and everything. So he doesn't really have expectations. He doesn't have to meet them in the way a lot of people do, because, again, the straw poll, it's a test of organizational strength, but it's always about expectations, too. And so he doesn't have the same expectations as somebody who's actually on the ballot. But on the other hand, given the number of people here that seem to be supporting him, he better beat some of the people at the bottom of the ticket, at least one or two of them, or else people kind of go, well, wait a minute, what happened to all these people that were walking around with these shirts? Didn't they write in their guy, kind of a thing? So low expectations, but I would think he probably will end up not at the very bottom, even with a write-in vote, and that looks good for him.
Will Iowa suffer political depression after 5 o'clock this afternoon?
I don't know about that. I think that we're, as I told somebody yesterday, we're all kind of going to take a deep breath here. But at this point, even though the focus has been on the straw poll, and several of the candidates, of course, have been campaigning in other states, they can't just start from scratch in New Hampshire and South Carolina and Florida and so forth. But at this point, they've still got to work on their precinct game at this point. Now, today it was a matter of getting their supporters here over to Ames, but now it's a matter of working the precincts. You got your people fired up. We'll have to see how the results shake out. But then it's going to be a matter of turning those volunteers into activists back in the home counties and the home precincts. And starting up and revving up your campaign in New Hampshire, in South Carolina, because now it's a matter of, okay, we did it here in Iowa, now we've got to juggle two balls and three balls and, you know, ultimately 50 if they get the nomination and go on to the general election.
That's Tim Hagel, the University of Iowa Associate Professor of Political Science, that we had the chance to chat with, pick his brain a little bit, as somebody who's never been to a straw poll before. So it's always nice to talk to the political virgins, as it were. Well, let's talk about results. We're in the last half hour of the show, and by the way, your comments are definitely welcome. You can call us if you want to call us. It's toll-free, and the number is 866-266-2469. That's 866-266-2469. Pretty easy number to remember. Why I didn't, I don't know. You can call us. You can also go on to Blog Talk Radio if you're listening live, and you can chat with us. If you have comments after the fact, that will this is going to be our regular feature, our kind of run-up to the caucuses. You can send them in an email. My email is iowanews1@gmail.com. There's also a comment link on the Blog Talk Radio page that you can look at as well. So we looked at the results. Michelle Bachmann with 4,823 votes, about 152 votes between the two candidates that were one and two, between Bachmann and Ron Paul. And that's an interesting situation because we were being told as we were waiting for the vote to come out by the Bachmann campaign that they had given out 6,000 tickets at the straw poll for people to go in and watch the speeches and to vote. And, you know, there's $30 a piece for those tickets. They buy them in bulk, they got a discount, but still, there's a substantial amount of money that was expended by the campaign. They said they gave out 6,000. Ron Paul said he gave out about 4,000. Okay, so the results now, Michelle Bachmann didn't get 6,000 votes. She got 4,823. So 1,000 of those people didn't vote for her, that got tickets from her, meaning that maybe they went to Ron Paul, maybe they went to Rick Perry, who got 718 votes. Most of them, I'm guessing most of them probably went to Rick Perry and then to scattered other candidates down the line. But Rick Perry doing fairly well, having not appeared, having not organized, he hadn't even announced, and he yet still got 718 votes. So as we were talking with Tim Hagel, you know, in appearance, he's won, you know, a good percentage of the vote for not having even been a candidate up until, you know, just before the 5 o'clock deadline, and 718 people wrote his name into the ballot at the straw poll. As we mentioned, Ron Paul finishing very strong. He got 671 votes, more than the 4,000 tickets they say they gave out. So you could opine that 671 people that jumped ship, basically, from the Bachmann camp to the Ron Paul camp. We don't know that, but these are things that will be said and spun in the days to come. And, of course, Tim Pawlenty was at 2,293, so he was almost 2,400 votes separated from the top two. Now, traditionally, what has been said in these straw polls is if you get above the top five, you're doing okay and you'll last. But that's a pretty poor showing. I mean, 2,200 votes behind Ron Paul, and that was apparently enough to make Tim Pawlenty take a second look at his campaign. Now, earlier, actually at the end of July, Simon Conway at WHO Radio had a chat with Tim Pawlenty about when, you know, what he wants from the campaign, what he wants from the straw poll as far as numbers, and when he would reconsider his campaign. And here's just a little bit of that.
Our goal at the straw poll, Simon, is this. The last Des Moines Register poll had us in sixth or seventh place. Mm-hmm. We've been in the back of the pack. Mm-hmm. We need to show meaningful progress. I don't think we need to win it, but we need to show a very good showing and show progress, and I'm confident that we will. And this notion that, you know, we're going to drop out of the straw poll race, my goodness, mm-hmm. That's ridiculous. We're going to do well in the straw poll, and you'll see us continue to make great progress towards the caucuses.
Okay, there's been a couple of national stories about that. I saw one in, I believe it was the Washington Post, that suggests that your progress has not been that great nationally. Is that concerning to you?
No, not yet, because we're focused on the early states of Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, and the early polls nationally, with all due respect to them, don't really mean that much. Mm-hmm. They almost never predict the winner. And if we show early progress here in Iowa and the early states of New Hampshire and South Carolina, you'll see the momentum nationally.
Interesting situation. Here you have Tim Pawlenty, who says that we need to show progress. He comes in third place. And then this morning, he gets on ABC's This Week with Jake Tapper and says this. Well, I thought he was going to say that. He doesn't appear to want to. Let's try this again.
I'm sorry, Governor, a disappointing finish for you. What went wrong?
Well, it was disappointing, but let me first say, Jake, this has been an incredible process. It's been a great honor for Mary and me and our team to convey the message of trying to get this country back on track, and I think it is off track. But bringing my record forward as a two-term governor of a blue state, doing things like getting government spending under control, doing health care reform the right way, and much more. But obviously that message didn't get the kind of traction or lift that we needed and hoped for coming into the and out of the Ames straw poll. We needed to get some lift to continue on and to have a pathway forward. That didn't happen, so I'm announcing this morning on your show that I'm going to be ending my campaign for president. But I'm very, very grateful for the people of Iowa, the people of this country who I had a chance to make my case to, and for my supporters and staff and friends who've been so loyal and helpful. I really appreciate all of them. I wish it would have been different. But obviously the pathway forward for me doesn't really exist, and so we're going to end the campaign.
What do you think went wrong? You're a popular two-term governor from a neighboring state. You had a lot of organization. You had some money at one point. Why couldn't you sell the dog food here?
Well, I hope it's better than dog food, Jake.
The filet. Why couldn't you sell it?
Well, there's a lot of factors that go into a successful campaign. Obviously, we had some success raising money, but we needed to continue that, and Ames was a benchmark for that. And if we didn't do well in Ames, we weren't going to have the fuel and to keep the car going down the road. But also, there's a lot of other choices in the race. And for me, what I brought forward, I thought was a rational, established, credible, strong record of results. Based on experience governing a two-term governor of a blue state, but I think the audience, so to speak, was looking for something different.
Well,
so Tim Pawlenty saying the audience was looking for something different. I think the something different in Ames was the social conservatives, Tim Pawlenty being more of a fiscal conservative, who also had to try and say, oh, I'm also a social conservative, but most of his statement, most of his campaigning all revolved around fiscal issues, and sensing a vacuum, I guess, Rick Santorum had been in the last few weeks, actually, probably the last month and a half, have been really trying to connect with the social conservatives who are very, very active in Iowa's caucuses, the same people that put Mike Huckabee over the top. And they may not have turned out, you know, in the 4,000 numbers at the straw poll, but Santorum got 1,657, so he came in fourth place. And, you know, in this particular case, he came in 3,200 votes behind Michelle Bachmann, but he's now claiming victory. We got an email basically saying that he declared it a victory and that he finished in the top tier and that he was going to use that momentum to, you know, to go on and hopefully win the Iowa caucuses and move forward. So whereas Tim Pawlenty was looking at the 2,293 votes and thinking he'd gotten bested by his fellow Minnesotan, Michelle Bachmann, Rick Santorum looked at it and saw, instead of seeing a problem, he sees an opportunity. We were always taught that in sales class, you know, don't see problems, see opportunities. So Rick Santorum sees an opportunity. And now he is intensifying his social conservative message, anti-abortion, and specifically in Iowa, anti-gay marriage. He did that again today. He was a last-minute ad to the Black Hawk County Republican Party Lincoln Day dinner. The original speaker was only going to be Rick Perry, who had accepted an invitation to speak, and he was the only one on the roster until a couple of days ago. Michelle Bachmann, upset, I think, and worried that suddenly Rick Perry, who at that time hadn't even announced he was going to run for president, but everybody thought he would, was going to give a speech in her hometown at the Electric Park Ballroom where she made her announcement. So she got on the menu, so to speak, of speakers. And then Santorum somehow added himself to that as well and spoke. Didn't get Santorum's speech captured, but from what I understand, he made the speech largely about the gay marriage issue and talked about how other candidates aren't addressing that issue. So he's trying to make that his niche for Iowa. And I'm sure when he's addressing the financial people, telling them, hey, you know, I'm addressing this issue in Iowa, you should give your money to me because I'm the only one who will be your voice in the Republican presidential process. So I think he really feels now that he's got his momentum to get him at least through the caucuses. So he's hanging in there, even though he was at number four behind the guy who just stepped out today. And I think with Tim Pawlenty, what he is seeing is with the announcement of Rick Perry in there, there's really a guy who can capture both audiences. Perry hasn't spoken much in the national public eye, but he is a religious man. He led a national prayer breakfast with some controversy. He is someone who has been a fiscal conservative as well. And so he kind of takes both of those bills. And I think Pawlenty saw some of the air come out of the room in which he was occupying, because Rick Perry can fill that up. He has many moneyed connections that can keep him going for a long period of time, whereas Pawlenty is one of those who was really running dry. So was Santorum. So it's going to be interesting to see if Santorum can tap the Iowa social conservative groups, perhaps the groups that have been opposed to gay marriage in the past, can tap them for money to keep him going and to finance his operation up through the caucuses, which right now are supposed to be in February. We don't know exactly when they'll be. But he looks to be the big competition for Rick Perry. Michelle Bachmann is going to have to prove that she can organize, that she can take it from the straw poll to February, keep getting adequate amounts of money, keep in the national eye, keep bringing her message forward, and, like I said, collect those checks. You've got to make the money to make it work. Those are all things that are going to happen in the next few weeks and months, actually. We may not see the candidates until probably Labor Day. I'm saying that because Sarah Palin is scheduled to speak for the one of the Iowa Tea Party groups over the Labor Day weekend. And that speech will, I'm guessing, bring pretty much every other candidate, every other organization into the area right in the days before Sarah speaks and probably after Mrs. Palin speaks, because they will not want to be bested in the public eye by her. So Michelle Bachmann, I have no doubt, is trying to see if she can speak at the Tea Party event, because she's considered Tea Party. I am sure that Rick Santorum is probably trying to be at that event as well, and Rick Perry to be at that event. So I'm wondering if that event will suddenly become like the Blackhawk County Republican fundraiser, an event where, you know, they thought they'd have a speaker and it would get X number of people, when instead they have a speaker and they get X number of people and a bajillion members of the media just complicating their life quite a bit. So Labor Day, we'll see them. And then after that, they'll kind of fade, you know, kind of like right after the Jerry Lewis telethon. You don't hear much about muscular dystrophy for a while. You won't hear much about politics, at least national presidential politics, until October, November. It'll ramp up a little more. The organizations will start kicking in, making phone calls, trying to organize on the precinct level. And then you'll see the candidates start to try and get all of those forces rounded up so that everybody in your neighborhood who's a Republican, who has said they support Rick Santorum or Michelle Bachmann or Ron Paul or whomever, that they turn out at the caucus that's held in your precinct and that they vote for you all the way through the process, that they say, you know, I'm strong for fill in the blank. And that's the key test. And that's what Ames used to test is a statewide organization. But now they've got to take those principles and go from the macro to the micro and take it down to a level where not everybody succeeds at that. The other thing, they don't see January or February. And that's the interesting part, that I'm wondering if Herman Cain supporters think that he can last through this campaign up until January. We haven't really heard from him yet saying, I'm in it to win it and I'm here forever. Mitt Romney avoided the straw poll. He says he'll campaign for the caucuses. He got 567 votes, but he doesn't have the fire right now, the big mole that Rick Perry has or Michelle Bachmann has. So how well he'll test out or whether he'll stay in is yet to be seen. He didn't stay in all the way, you know, through the race. You know, John McCain ended up being the nominee almost by default because everybody else quit. Newt Gingrich got 385 votes in the straw poll balloting, and Newt has run out of money. He's had most of his campaign staff that he started with quit on him and has been running the way that we've been informed, with staffers who have been issued IOUs instead of paychecks. So how long he can maintain on that, not having, you know, shown well in the straw poll, not having been outstanding in the debate that took place last Thursday. I mean, the big thing that he'll be remembered from that debate was the fact that he took on Chris Wallace and said he was being asked Mickey Mouse questions when he was asked about the stability of his campaign. And in honesty, the people that are writing checks to give donations, they want to know how stable your campaign is. Why did that happen? What's going to happen in the future? And if you can't provide a clear, concise answer, he's going to, you know, it's going to bite you in the rear end financially. You're not going to get the donations. John Huntsman, he got 69 votes. Thaddeus McCotter. Thad McCotter, poor guy, he spent $19,000. He was the second place bidder for the primo space at the straw poll, outside the straw poll. Ron Paul was first. Ron Paul got the prime area. It was a neat area. He had food. He also had a slide, one of those inflatable slides, that big tall slide, and he called it the money slide. And he, of course, that gave him the ability to have a little sign describing everything that was going on. But Ron Paul had the best spot. McCotter had the second best spot, and the other candidates divvied up the rest of it and didn't spend as much. He spent $19,000 and he got 35 votes. You do the math. That's pretty expensive per vote. But it was his first try. He was getting his name out there. I'm sure that Rick Perry paid more than $718 for his 718 votes. At least the groups that had been organizing for him, they were out there, as you heard Tim Cagle mention. They were out there with T-shirts on. They were, you know, trying to get people to come over and, you know, confirm that they were going to vote for Rick Perry, and they would have to write in the vote. And, of course, Rick Perry did get some help, I think. I think he got some help from Stephen Colbert from Comedy Central, who took out ads on a couple of TV stations in Des Moines, say, with his, you know, he has formed a political action committee. He claims he's got, you know, like $165,000, and he used some of that money to put out ads saying that, you know, Rick Perry has a lot of big money political action committees that want you are trying to spend money to buy your vote at the Ames straw poll, but we want to buy your vote, so we want you to go to the straw poll and write in Rick Perry. Only we want you to spell Perry with an A for America, and an A is in the A in Iowa. And so I did ask Casey Mills, who's the communications director for the Iowa Republican Party, I asked him if all of Rick Perry's votes were spelled P-E-R-R-Y. And he wouldn't give me an answer on that other than to say that the ballots were counted according to the election laws of the state of Iowa. So I'm not sure. I have to go investigate that. I really haven't had time to go figure that one out. But we did get 718 votes. I don't know whether Stephen Colbert can claim credit for all of those or not. But that's what happened with the balloting. Who do I think is going to drop out? I think that you will see Herman Cain probably, well, this is August. I would say the end of September, beginning of October, Herman Cain will drop out. I think Newt Gingrich is going to get the message probably around, he's been getting some help from a couple of groups that are out there. I don't know how much longer they can prop him up and keep him going, but my guess is October or November. I think that John Huntsman will be out very soon. Dad McCotter probably will stick around, but he'll be kind of like the Harold Stassen of the current Republican political race, and that he'll just run and you know, pick and choose where he shows up and spends a few dollars here and there. I don't think we'll see much of him at all. Rick Santorum, I think he wants to get to January. The question is, can he do it? Mike Huckabee had some comments about this when we were talking to him, and he pointed out that with Huckabee, after he took second place in the straw poll, he just kind of thought, well, you know, maybe we can do this, maybe we can't. But what he decided to do is to jettison a lot of the big-name national political organizers that suck your campaign dry of funding because they command these $100,000 plus salaries. And he went with a group of small group of people who were committed to what they were doing, that knew the states that they were working in and were willing to work cheap. And he went into Iowa on fumes, and they won Iowa because these people were committed. Now, of course, after Iowa, he didn't have any money in the bank, and they were having trouble knocking on the doors and saying, you know, can I get money from you, from the party faithful? Probably the same thing Tim Pawlenty was experiencing. So can Santorum get to January? Probably, through the funding of the social conservatives in Iowa. Some of the main contributors, the people that have funded the campaign. I imagine that Rick Santorum will get very friendly with Bob Vanderplaats and attempt to pick up his Rolodex for fundraising in order to tap them for money, and some of the national groups that helped the family leader in its anti-gay marriage campaign. That is why he made the speech today, trying to position himself as the anti-gay marriage candidate. And oddly enough, Rick Perry didn't talk at all about social issues in his speech in Waterloo today. I think he was assuming that he had them in the bag and that he could speak to fiscal issues instead. So it's going to be an interesting time to see if a Rick Santorum can make it through. Now that Rick Perry's in there, I think it does take, it lets some of the oxygen out of Santorum's balloon, and only time will tell. I think Rick Perry will probably be back and be speaking to more socially conservative groups and showing that he has the cred, because he has led prayer breakfast. He's been conservative on a religious basis for a long time, and he served as a governor. He's actually run a government before. Rick Santorum has only been a senator, and so I think there will be a big clash there. I think that that may benefit Michelle Bachmann somewhat, because she can be out of that fray and just continue to be out there, be outspoken, give her message, which tends to energize the Republican base and make them feel like, you know, they're worthwhile once again. Now, all of my predictions as far as Bachmann, Rick Santorum, and Rick Perry kind of go by the wayside if Sarah Palin comes into the mix. I don't think she will. I still think on Labor Day, a lot of people say, oh, Labor Day, she'll announce. She'll announce on Labor Day. She'll tell everybody she's running for president, and she wanted to announce here in Iowa because this is, you know, the heart of conservatism. I don't think so. I really think that Sarah Palin is comfortable in her own skin doing what she's doing now, which is rallying a national audience. And I don't see her jumping into the race unless somebody ticks her off and she decides, you know, come hell or high water, she's going to jump in. But I don't see it happening in the area on the Labor Day weekend or any time after that. I do think there are some people who have said they're not running who may decide they do want to run. I think there are some people who have thought a lot about running and may decide to run as we get closer to November and December. That we already know Rudy Giuliani is shaking the trees to see if anything falls out with respect to trying a run again for president. I don't think that's going to happen, but he's looking around to see if there's support for him to do that. He knows that support probably would not be in Iowa. It's why he didn't try to run here the last time around. But he is trying to see if indeed that is a possibility. So it's going to be an interesting time. I'm looking forward to your comments and your ideas, your questions to me for our future podcasts. And I apologize. We had a major equipment blow up here. We had a lightning strike that actually blew up my computer that I used for all of this stuff. And it took a little while to get everything back in order and get a new computer hooked up and ready to go and configured properly. So I waited a little while until we had something to really, really talk about. We're going to try to do this podcast, this Political Geek podcast, twice a week. Once on Sundays and once in the middle of the week, if possible. I may move it to Saturdays. I look for your input as to what days are best when you want to talk about politics, because I really want to make this mostly your show, so that we talk about the things that are on your mind, because I could sit here and vamp for an hour and a half on my political views, and it'd be a great podcast to put you to sleep, but I'd rather we talk about it together, even if you disagree with me. I really want to hear from you. We still have a couple minutes if you want to, if you're in the live stream right now. 866-266-2469 is the number. You can be a part of this if you'd like to call in live right now. It will take you right into our switchboard. Or you can, if you're on Blog Talk Radio, you can just click on the live chat button, and it will call right in to the broadcast. So you have a couple of ways that you can do that. You can call in with Skype. You can just call the number on a phone. You can call the 800 number, and you can chat with us. If you go to the chat room on Blog Talk Radio, you can be a part of it. We've had a lot of conversations in the past in this podcast just doing it that way. Any way that you want to participate, hey, man, we really appreciate that. What I want to do is to close with a little bit of a speech that was made earlier this evening. One of the reasons we delayed all of this was to get a little bit of an idea of what Rick Perry was going to say. So here's a little bit from his speech today in Waterloo.
I'll be real honest with you, I don't even know what the second one was, but let me just address this issue of illegal immigration. And it's really an issue that has to be addressed. Being the governor of Texas, obviously, we've got 1,200-mile border. It's something I've been dealing with for a very long period of time, for practically the entire time that I was the governor of Texas. And unfortunately, the issue is about border security. 2 months ago, the President of the United States came to El Paso, Texas, to do a political speech. That's exactly right, to give a political speech. Stood on the border and said that the border between Texas and Mexico was safer than it had ever been in history. Now, I don't know what history books he's reading, but it's not the one that I know. And it's not the border that I know. We're spending $150+ million in our 2-year budget in Texas to supplement the border control, supplement the local sheriff.
Well, that's all the time that we have for this edition of the Political Geek. We're going to get all the stuff ironed out so that next time around you have a really first-class broadcast to listen to. We encourage you to pay attention to the podcast version that we'll be putting out. We'll edit all the junk that you've had to hear. And we'll be back again next time on the Political Geek.
90 seconds.
Provided I can back time everything correctly. So once again, thank you for being with us. And have yourselves a great week. A great Political Geek week.